Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to the Leaving Eden podcast. Welcome, 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 welcome in here to this show. We are your hosts, Sadie Carpenter, cult expert, cult survivor, Sadie Carpenter. She is here with you as always. My name is Gabrielle Hacohen.
Hello, hello. What are we up to today?
Today's episode is going to be a good one. A couple, almost like a month ago, we did two episodes. One episode was about I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Joshua Harris, and then the next episode was about the book The Woman They Wanted, which was written by Shannon Harris, Joshua Harris's ex-wife. For those that are just joining us now that aren't familiar, I Kissed Dating Goodbye was a book that came out in 1997. It basically defined what purity culture was for a lot of the evangelical movement through the late 90s, through the 2000s, even through much of the 2010s. So a lot of people who are about our age, who are listeners to this show, grew up with the teachings that are in this book. If you want to go out and check out that episode and hear what we had to say about it, it's just, I think, a couple of episodes ago, and you can just scroll back. It's not that far back on the feed. And The Woman They Wanted is a book written by the ex-wife of Joshua Harris, detailed account of what it is like to be the wife of a megachurch pastor in this kind of complementarian slash patriarchal fundamentalism, evangelicalism, what have you. Very good book. We would highly recommend that you read it. Anyway, today we have listener responses to that because so many people had such a strong emotional responses to the episodes that we did, and people that grew up with the teachings that are in that book had their own stories to tell. So we thought we would do an episode where we read some of those stories on the air.
I think the most important thing that we talked about when we talked about I Kissed Dating Goodbye is the impact that this book had on so many people, not just in Josh Harris's generation, but in my generation, which is the kind of the next generation of purity culture about 15 years later. This book crossed generations, crossed denominations, and impacted a lot of people. It makes sense that many of our listeners had many things to say about this book. And I want to platform people who were harmed by this book and talk about it.
The stories that we're reading today are stories that are either ones that were emailed to us when we asked for listeners to email their stories to us, or they're taken from a specific post that we made in the Facebook group where we basically said, please comment on this post or type your story on this post. And we're not going to be reading anybody's names or attributing any of these names to individual people unless they specifically said you are free to do that. So if you posted your story on there and you didn't say you can use my name, then we're not going to use your name. But before we get into that, the Leaving Eden podcast is the podcast that is mostly, I guess, about my BFF and co-host, cult expert, cult survivor, Sadie Carpenter's life in and escape from the Independent Fundamental Baptist cult, the cult in which she was raised. We talk about this cult. We talk about other cults. We talk about religion. We talk about Christian fundamentalism. We talk about the real and present threat that cults and cult ideologies pose to society as a whole. And it is our goal to promote freedom of mind, freedom of thought, and freedom of religion. If you like our show, if you're a fan of our show, you can join us on Patreon, where you get every episode a couple of days early. So most episodes come out on Monday. If you join the Patreon, you get it on Saturday or even Friday night if you're on a West Coast time zone. So you can listen to it over the weekend if you want to. And you also get an extended, uncensored, ad-free version of the show, which is cool if you like that. And you also get to support us financially, which we wouldn't be able to make the show if we didn't have the financial support of our patrons. So you can join us over on Patreon. If you just want to join in the discussion, you can go to our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/EdenExodus, Eden Exodus. We also have a subreddit also called Eden Exodus. Both are great places to talk to other listeners, talk to other fans, just share your stories, share memes. We're positive on religion. We're positive on atheism. You know, we like to try to keep it as respectful as possible and have diversity of thought and diversity of viewpoints and opinions. So that's a cool place where you can discuss that stuff respectfully. It's a lot of fun. Sadie, do you want to thank our patrons, our Faith Promise Mission, and I Gave It All tier patrons?
Yeah, let's do it. Our I Gave It All tier patrons are I'm Not 1010, Kathleen Moncrief, Melissa Manown, Melora King, and Todd Dale on behalf of his cult survivor wife, Madeline Antrim. Our Faith Promise Missions tier patrons are Allie Allen, Autumn of Our Discontent, Brittany, Crystal Walker, Dora J, Hannah Ross, Hannah Montana, Hope Norum, Horton Here's a Shane, Janine Callen, Jana Connor, Jen Kaharski, Jessica Tambo, Jonna, Junie B. Jones, and the B stands for Back on My Bullshit, Kat Hinwood, Kay Terwee, Kristen Marie, Learned Vixen, Linda Morgan, Madeline Antrim, Madeline Cusick, Marlena Stuve, Mary Martin, Megan Arndt, Melissa G., Morgs, Rob the Methodist, Stephanie Johnson, Stephen Amy, Susie, Tara McNamara, and Wes the Cowboy.
Thank you guys so much for subscribing at the Faith Promise Missions tier of our Patreon.
And to everybody who subscribes to us on Patreon at any level, as well as to people who support us in equally important non-financial ways, like being subscribed to our show on whatever podcast player you use to listen to us, posting about us on social media, recommending us to friends and family, being active on our social media accounts and our Facebook group. All of those things make a huge difference. All of those things support our show, and we are so thankful. In general, we talk about a lot of potentially triggering topics on this show, including but not limited to suicide and mental health, racism, misogyny, PTSD and PTSD symptoms, child abuse, mental, physical, and sexual abuse, and spiritual abuse, including guilt, shame, and fear. In most episodes, we will mention at least a few of these topics, but we avoid graphic detail unless it's relevant to the story that we're telling, and we give our audience a heads up if we are going to include any of that graphic detail. This episode is all about purity culture. We will be talking about purity culture, true love waits, modesty, and there will be very brief mentions of sexual violence with no details given.
All right, so why don't we just get straight into the stories? Actually, before we get into the stories, I just want to make a note of something that Rebecca in the Facebook group pointed out. Rebecca pointed out that Joshua, these two books, if you go back and listen to our episodes, we had thoughts on them. We especially had thoughts on The Woman They Wanted. And as if you're familiar, Joshua Harris is somebody who has recently, in the past 5 years or so, come out and said that he is no longer a religious person. He is now an atheist. And he got kind of in some trouble for trying to sell an online course for deconstruction, and people were not really having it. Rebecca in the Facebook group pointed out that Joshua actually recommended his ex-wife's book on Davey Jackson's podcast. I'm not familiar with this podcast, but According to Rebecca, he said that he highlighted that it was important that the woman they wanted was written by a woman's perspective in purity culture and in their marriage, which I guess is a point for Joshua Harris, but like also, I don't know.
So my whole take on Harris is that speaking of we as progressive Christian or deconverted deconstructors from evangelicalism and purity culture, and we especially being women, LGBTQ people, and others who are disproportionately harmed by purity culture, have every right to be cautious and not trust Josh Harris, and no obligation to ever fully trust Josh Harris. Personally, I think that the evidence that I've seen from following him on social media for a few years, reading things that he has written and interviews that he has done in recent years, I think all of that evidence points to someone who has the full intention of changing and repairing the harm that he has done. But as I said a minute ago, even if I'm right, even if his motivations and intentions are 100% pure, people who have been harmed by his former teachings are not obligated to him. Not obligated to trust him, forgive him, or let him hold any particular position in their life. That being said, I think him recommending his ex-wife's book on a podcast is another piece of evidence that he is sincere. I also wanted to add, I heard from someone I trust that there is a small group of LGBTQ Christian pastors who are willing to vouch for Josh Harris, and I think that's very meaningful. So the more I learn, the more evidence I get that he is sincere about wanting to repair the harm, and this is another support for that.
Part of him deconstructing is also him having to deconstruct the idea that you can just, that you can do XYZ thing and your sins will automatically be absolved.
Right.
Which I think is like that there are some people that are just never going to be happy with him, and he just has to live with that. And that's fine. You know, and if your goal is to please everybody, then, you know, you're setting your sights too high, and that's just not realistic even for anybody who's never really done anything to, you know, make everybody mad. Do you want to read this first letter that we got?
Sure. So this one, are we using this person's name? Yes. Okay. This is from Sharla. She says, this book, well, I read this book in late high school. The book wasn't particularly new material for me. It was more codifying ideas about dating that were less formally around my church and community. It's hard for me to separate this book from purity culture in general. The first problem came when I went to college and was ready to date. I was 18. I wasn't spending time with anyone I had known more than 2 months. The adults in my life were like my 23-year-old RA. I wasn't exactly in a solid community. I had never discussed dating with my parents because I wasn't dating. I started dating a guy about 2 months into the school year, but how does someone actually date? I didn't know WTF I was doing, and I paid for that, as did a few guys I left in my path of destruction. Very chaste destruction. Sharla, I've left some very chaste destruction in my lifetime. I felt that phrase. Back to Sharla's email. Combine inexperience with the total depravity weirdness that Sadie mentioned, I shouldn't listen to my emotions because they're wrong. I should just do the right thing. Which all meant that I did some officially correct things that were absolutely wrong for me. I spent too long dating a guy who was a nice Christian boy, but not the boy for me because I didn't listen to my emotions telling me that I was going to be super bored if I married that guy. Breaking up with a nice guy who didn't fit the nice Christian boy mold, but in retrospect, was potentially a great life partner for me. Not dating any of the boys who asked me out if I didn't already know that they were nice Christian boys who I could marry. I really liked Shannon's book, but I'm still working through that one in therapy and don't have coherent thoughts. Your thoughts were perfectly coherent, Sharla. Thanks for doing these books.
Whenever somebody comes out with like a dating manual, and this goes for ones that I think are Christian, because we've read quite a few Christian ones, and we've read quite a few, I get dating content marketed to me as a man on social media, even though I am very happily in a relationship and not.
You're extremely booed up.
Yeah, I am extremely booed up, and I'm not interested in that sort of content, but they think, oh, here's a man. I'm going to try and sell him this content. It seems like so much of this content is based around, here is how to do things properly, follow my step-by-step instructions. Well, what if something happens that isn't foreseen in this step-by-step instructions? What do you do there?
Right, because the whole vibe of all of these purity culture books, and especially I Kissed Dating Goodbye, is this is a complete answer to every question you could ever have about dating.
Well, it also kind of goes back to the belief that the Bible is the answer to every question.
Ooh, that's a good thought.
And not to say that Joshua Harris is at all associated with Bill Gothard, because I know he's not associated with Bill Gothard, completely different.
Not associated with him, but a lot of IBLP kids read I Kissed Dating Goodbye.
Do you think they would have read I Kissed Dating Goodbye if they knew that Joshua Harris was a Calvinist?
IBLP doesn't care as much about that stuff as the IFB does.
Interesting. Okay.
That's my perception. Chad, Heather, Lindsay, and everybody else, correct me if I'm wrong.
Anyway, my thought is that because the IBLP, and if you read like their basic seminar, their advanced seminar, whatever, and their wisdom booklets, it's all like principles that are apparently distilled from the biblical value. Like the Bible is like the thing, and then you distill things from the Bible, and then from those things that you distill from the Bible, you distill how to act. So it's like there's like levels to this. And this almost seems like that, where this is, well, because these ideas are distilled from how we're supposed to act as Christians, then therefore they're almost like a secondary level of biblical commandment.
Yeah. And you see that same idea in IFB dating manuals, like Dating with a Purpose, or so many other things that are more IFB specific.
One of the things that people who deconstruct, that, you know, from talking to them, one of the things that people have to deal with is understanding, oh, I don't have all the answers, which also is something coincidentally that Joshua Harris in his deconstruction online course that he tried to sell on the internet, he was like, what if you don't have all the answers? And I'm like, buddy,
what if you don't have all, no,
what if you don't have all the answers?
Harris, but I get it, because that was really, really tough for me. That was one of the questions that was, I don't know, a huge part of my early deconstruction was learning to say I don't know. And that was so hard. I have had some very similar experiences to you.
Do you want to move on? Do you want me to read the next one?
Yeah, let's go to the next one.
Okay, so the next one is from an anonymous person who says, hey guys, I saw your post about wanting listener experiences with I Kissed Dating Goodbye and wanted to share mine. Well, we're happy to have yours. I was in middle school around the time the book came out. So that was in 1997. Okay, so you must be about maybe 10 years older than us.
Because I was in middle school in 2007.
Yeah, I started high school in 2007. We started high school in 2007.
There wasn't a difference for me. I'm still doing ACE until 2008, I think.
I was in middle school around the time the book came out, and I think I was in eighth grade when our youth group had a girls-only lock-in where several women who worked with the youth group told us their stories about how having sex before they were married absolutely ruined their lives. It didn't. It's just much more likely that the shame imposed by the church did a good job of that on its own. Bummer. Afterwards, we all signed purity pledges promising to save ourselves for marriage, and we were gifted promise rings. And then we all tried on wedding dresses and had our pictures taken. I so wish I could find those pictures. What a bizarre activity. That is, oy vey. We were also gifted a lifelong shame for having any kind of sexuality or interest in even kissing someone else. The message of this lock-in was reinforced for the next several years while in youth group. Every February, we would have sex month.
What?
And all of the lessons would be about how wrong premarital sex was and how good everything would be after we got married. And it wasn't just sex that was discouraged. There was lots of warning about how even kissing could lead to sex, so it's best not to do that either. Cue Mean Girls scene where the coach is teaching sex ed in the lesson by saying, don't have sex because you will get pregnant and die. Don't have sex in the missionary position. Don't have sex standing up. Just don't do it. Okay, promise. When I met my now husband in college, I would feel guilty for making out even though we did wait to have sex until marriage. To this day, 14 years into our marriage, I still struggle with feelings of guilt when my husband and I are physically intimate. Anyway, thanks for reading and thank you for the podcast. That sucks. I'm really sorry to hear that. Purity culture doesn't just f*** you up when you're...
And it can have different effects on everybody. Like, some people may not have any guilt around intimacy, but can have physical problems related to intimacy. And that goes for people of all genders. That can absolutely be a result of purity culture. So my two usual recommendations. Hold on, let me pull up. Oh, I can't do the Hannah Hills. So Hannah Hill DPT on Twitter. I will tweet out something from them so that you can see their account. And then Erica Smith Sex Ed on Instagram. Erica is a sex educator who works with survivors of purity culture. And she is at ericasmith.sex.ed on Instagram. Because this is not having some kind of permanent issue from purity culture, like guilt, even with married sex, or like physical problems or many other things, is not uncommon at all. And it hurts to hear every time. And I'm so sorry that people are going through this and it breaks my heart. But it's just not uncommon. This is one effect of purity culture.
You know, they just tell you don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex, don't have sex. No sex. And then once you get married, it's like, okay, you know, now for the next however many years, you're just going to be like, make babies, make mm-hmm. babies for God, you know, fill your quiver full of arrows, you know. You just like turn on a dime and suddenly it's like, okay now, because I'm following the rules, I'm doing everything okay, we're in the clear, but that's not exactly how this works. If you build like walls of guilt and shame around something, it's difficult for those things to come down, even if you have the quote unquote permission to do it properly.
Yeah, I think my experience was sex was so glorified within purity culture. It was the biggest thing you could ever do. And when I did get there, my reaction was kind of, that was it. And it didn't feel special to me. And I didn't connect that with emotional intimacy for a while because it wasn't what it was built up to be by purity culture.
Did you ever think, did I do it wrong? Was that like your thought or was it?
No, it was like, is there something wrong with my heart? Because I had always been told if you even kiss somebody, you've given away a piece of your heart to them. And I didn't feel like my heart changed. So what am I broken? Because I'm not having this intense emotional bonding reaction that I was told I would have.
I'm remembering back to when we had Heather Heath on. And she was talking about...
looking for the light going out behind her eyes. Yes.
Right, because Bill Gothard was always saying, oh, you know, you can tell when a woman isn't a virgin or when a woman is a virgin because she has a light in her eyes. And Heather came on our show and talked about thinking that the light, like going up afterwards and looking in the mirror and trying to see if the light had left her eyes. And I'm thinking about like the people with the black eyes. I just saw Dune 2.
Yeah, because you're told it's going to change you forever, emotionally and physically and morally and spiritually and in all these ways. And when it does happen and you don't feel changed, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is something that isn't necessarily, I mean, it's definitely stronger in fundamentalism, but it's also something that I don't think is unique to fundamentalism in that there is a lot of like cultural buildup around virginity and mm-hmm. oh, if you're a virgin, then like this was one of the things that we also talked about in our Manosphere episode with the incels, where they're like, everybody who has done this thing knows something that I don't, or has something that has an innate ability or knowledge or whatever that I don't have. And they're like a very in-group and out-group kind of thing. And it's not really like that at all, man.
And we're going to come back to this. The one Facebook post that I'm saving for last, it is exclusive of anyone who is on the asexual spectrum, but it is also often exclusive of LGBT people, because the way that they are defining sex as a very specific thing that only a cis man and a cis woman do, with specific roles attached to that and specific actions attached to that. And that definition of sex does not fit many LGBTQ people. That definition excludes a ton of people, and the glorification of sex in general excludes a bunch of asexual people. And it's just a mess, because it's just a mess. It's horribly exclusive.
I don't know. Having read quite a few fundy sex manuals, there are ones that are kind of like meh, and there are ones that are like, oh, that's awful. Let's move on to this next letter. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's cool.
Do you want to read it, or do you want me to?
I can read this. This one is from an anonymous listener. They say, the first time I saw a purity culture object lesson was at summer camp. My counselor held up a rose and handed it to one of my cabin mates. She instructed each of us to take a petal or two or three from the rose and pass it along. When it returned to her, it was a husk of its former self. She told us that was what would happen to us if we dated before marrying. Later on, I saw the same type of presentation with a piece of tape, a piece of gum, a glass of water that people spit into, etc., etc. Every time the lesson was the same: don't date unless you intend to marry, don't give away pieces of your heart. If you do, you're no better than used chewing gum or a destroyed rose. On one hand, this no casual dating culture gave me an easy out. As a queer person, I didn't want to marry any of the people I could have dated anyway, so it was easy to tell myself that I was not dating because I was saving myself for my future spouse, when in fact I simply figured I'd never be allowed to date or marry a person I loved anyway. On the other hand, as an assault survivor, every single one of these discussions made me feel unworthy of love. I was already damaged goods, so who was going to want me anyway? Had I stayed in the IFB church, I would have either been single for the rest of my life, and therefore secretly and not so secretly pitied by all other women and AFAB people, or I would have been trapped in a marriage that I would not have wanted, to someone who was willing to bear the cross of marrying a person who hadn't saved themselves, even though I had no option to save myself from the assault. This is going to be a cry on mic day for me. That just hurts, because the piece of tape, piece of gum, glass of water, licked candy bar, the ones that I saw that don't usually make the list are a smashed up apple, like a bruised apple. And one Christian womanhood that I went to, some lady brought an actual alabaster box in. That was creepy. That one still gets me.
What's an alabaster box?
It's a New Testament thing that you wouldn't know about. In Christian biblical times, perfume would be packaged in a little like marble or alabaster box. So they didn't have like resealable packaging, but they would put it in a box. And then when you wanted to use the perfume, you would break the box, and you could use the perfume inside.
Oh, okay.
So once you're broken and your perfume has come out, you're never going to smell good for your future husband.
That's literally objectification, though.
That's what I was about to say. You know what a rose, a piece of tape, a piece of gum, a glass of water, a box, an apple have in common? Those are things. Those are things. And people are not things. And that includes all genders assigned at birth, and that includes AFAB people. We are not items. We are not things that can be taken away from by experiences that we have in life. Any experience, getting a driver's license, or trying a chocolate cake for the first time, or having a child, those things can change our perspective. They can make us feel that we've grown or that we've enjoyed something new, but they do not change the essence of who you are as a person, because you are not a thing, you are a person. It is just repeated objectification of women over and over and over again, and AFAB people over and over and over again. And then on top of it, it is causing an additional harm to people who have already been victims of sexual assault. So they've already been harmed. And instead of showing any love and compassion to people like that, this purity culture teaching doubles down and causes additional harm. And it is so frustrating.
Do you want to go to break and then we can come back and do more listener submitted?
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back from our break. We are reading listener responses, listener reactions to purity culture, to I Kissed Dating Goodbye, and to The Woman They Wanted by Shannon Harris. I'm going to just hop right into this next one. I think all of the ones from here on out are anonymous, so I'm just going to say that they're all anonymous. But here's a response that we got. It says, this book and related thinking made me say, too complicated and socially fraught to dating. I guess I had the sense that I could never live up to the expectations of my parents and hypothetical prospective in-laws. The image of asking some older man, presumably very conservative Christian with values aligned to my parents, for permission to date or court his daughter and be judged as to whether I'd be a suitable husband was terrifying. That was the image this book put in my head as necessary for attaining marriage, something which I was often reminded was expected of me, but just never felt right. Plot twist. I've long since, though relatively recently, figured out I'm a polyamorous lesbian, which explains much of my discomfort. Perhaps I would have gotten to know myself sooner if I'd not miseducated by this book and movement into having such a narrow and specific ideal of what relationships can be.
But good times now, it sounds like.
Yeah, be poly. stay safe out there.
Yeah, this is a really controversial opinion of mine, but I think that monogamous relationships can be just as healthy, and I think straight relationships can be just as healthy as queer and poly relationships if straight people and monogamous people are willing to put in the work to make sure it's ethical.
That's very real. Like the idea of like, oh, I need to attain permission from this woman's father to marry her. Also, so is this person trans that's writing to us?
Yeah, I think.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot more sense.
We don't have their name and pronouns, but I would assume that they are
because when they were a woman. Fundamentalism.
And well, that makes a lot of sense why she didn't feel like she could go ask some older man to date his daughter and be a suitable husband. Well, obviously, you were never going to be a suitable husband for anybody because you're not a husband.
Facts.
Figured it out. So what, this person didn't get to know themselves and their gender because they were put into a box of this is the specific dating ritual that you have to do, and it's defined by your assigned gender at birth. And I'm really glad that they are living their life and thriving now. But what they said was, perhaps I would have gotten to know myself sooner if I'd not been miseducated by this book and movement into having such a narrow and specific ideal of what relationships can be.
The other thing I'm thinking about is something that Alora Dodd said to us, is when Alora was talking to us about raising the stakes, that like finding a good relationship and finding somebody who you might want to marry is difficult enough, right? Like that's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world. And
right.
But then if you add on top of that the, oh, I need to get permission to do this from this woman's father, and I need to prove myself to him that I am a perfect, that I am like essentially immaculate, that I am the closest thing to Jesus, and I have attained the unobtainable. That's even more difficult. That like definitely raises the stakes that, you know, you could be really happy and this whole thing could get blown up if you, I don't know, just like the list of things that could violate a person's purity, that like, I don't know, you went to a website by accident and you got like a porn ad on a spam on a website, and then he asks you if you've ever seen a boob before, and you have to say, well, yes, technically I've seen a boob before, and he's like, nope.
Let's go to the next response, because that's actually going to lead us further down that same road. This one says, I first want to apologize to all those younger than I who endured this book. I was among some of the first young people to be influenced by this book and his follow-up book. This book, more than any other, was the reason I felt guilty for even thinking impure thoughts. I felt guilty crossing that line. I felt less than human. I felt like I felt like damaged goods, and when I had to have a hysterectomy before getting married, this book made me feel like it was all my fault. I am reading Shannon's book right now. I ended up attending one of Sovereign Grace's church plants in Surrey, British Columbia, Canada. Coming from the background I did, I thought it was great, a change, but as I read through, wow, I'm grateful I got out of there when I did.
I mean, Sovereign Grace Ministries is going to be better than IFB.
Yeah. Hopefully easier to get out of.
A lot of people, I think, find themselves in a church like a Sovereign Grace type church when they're on the way out of the IFB, because it's like, it's familiar, but it's more modern-ish. And then, but it's still, I mean, as we can tell from Sovereign Grace Ministries having produced a piece of media like I Kissed Dating Goodbye, there's still a lot of the same bad teachings there. Also, I'm very sad that you felt like damaged goods when you had to have a hysterectomy. People don't have a hysterectomy unless they have a severe medical need for that. That's not something that people just do.
And it's also not something that can be caused by thinking, quote unquote, impure thoughts. But that kind of non-scientific reasoning is so implanted into us by groups like this and by purity culture that I totally get why this person would feel that way. I absolutely understand why they would blame themselves for thinking impure thoughts. And that 100% makes sense to me. And I'm so sorry that they experienced it as well. I wanted to jump straight to this response because after the last one, you were talking about anything that you do accidentally can mess up your purity. And I have heard a lot of echoes of this sentiment where people thought they were impure because they had thought the wrong thoughts.
Did you, when you were in the IFB, did you think that if you thought the wrong thoughts that God would punish you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So did you think that like, oh, I thought of impure thoughts, I thought of a man that wasn't the man that I was going to get married to, okay, God is going to curse me with a medical malady that is going to cause me to have a hysterectomy and then therefore never be able to bear children for my husband?
That specifically, no, but that kind of line of thought, absolutely.
See, that is so f***ed, too. Just the amount of victim blaming, yeah, and the amount of like...
It is. And now I have OCD. Who's to say that it didn't come from that? Like, that's not an answer that I'm going to get, but that is very much the way that OCD feels for a lot of people. And I don't think I'm ever going to get an answer on, is that the chicken or the egg?
Well, also the number of people who we've talked to who, if it isn't like OCD, at least it is some like hyper anxious, like hyper anxiety type, where they're constantly worried about every single action that they could take and what that means, and almost magical thinking aspect of it, where simple choices that are just like, I don't know, I think I want pizza today instead of a burrito. But that's something that could, well, does God want me to have pizza or God, does God want me to have the burrito?
Yeah, you have to pray about it because you don't know if one of those two options is going to give you food poisoning. And God either wants you to be preserved from the food poisoning and not get sick, or God might want you to get sick with food poisoning and you'll get so sick that you have to go to the hospital and then you'll witness to a nurse and then she'll get saved. And you don't know whether God wants you to have pizza or a burrito for a very specific reason. So then you have to stop and pray about whether God would like you to have pizza or a burrito for lunch. And if you pick wrong, you probably prevented somebody from getting saved.
I mean, just like we were saying before with the raising the stakes, like Laura was talking about. Mm-hmm. Just, man. Also, I really liked having Laura Dodd on our pod. That was an incredible episode. It was like having Robin Williams from, like, have you seen the behind the scenes of Robin Williams playing the genie from Aladdin?
Yes.
Where he's just...
That was very much what it was like. And we will have her back when she's closer to having her a book date.
Yes. Anytime, Alora, you want to come back on this show, I would... Very entertaining episode. 10 out of 10. That's probably a top 10 episode for me. I'm going to go read the next one. One says, I kiss dating goodbye changed my life. Ooh, what a testimonial. I'm definitely not going to read beyond that sentence. No.
Oh boy.
I wanted to date so badly and have someone like me back. And I was sick of the boys in my high school being interested in me. This book came along and it resonated with me. Wait for the best thing and avoid messing up by giving my heart away. Fast forward to college, where I met a guy and we basically dated with a purpose and followed some of the general ideas. Fear-based, afraid of getting too close emotionally and physically, and ended up getting married young. I even felt guilty that I changed my mind from having a first kiss at the altar to kissing during engagement. I thought by doing the right thing, I was guaranteed to have a good marriage. My ex frequently felt like he needed to explore and meet other people before settling down. Fair point. But the culture around us encouraged marriage. That came up even while we were married. How could I work in a marriage when my spouse was bemoaning the past like that and waiting to explore, and I wasn't okay with that? Fast forward 11 years to getting divorced after staying together longer than we should. It was tough enough even from early on, but I was committed to never getting a divorce. So much guilt, shame, and fear. I felt betrayed by God because I held up my end of the bargain, so to speak. That was a major factor in my own deconstruction. Now I'm happily married to my forever guy, congratulations, who truly wants to be with me, and I am still sometimes fighting these bad thoughts from the book and purity culture. It helped so much when you both read parts of the book and debunked it. In my mind, I still thought Josh's logic made sense. Thank you for reviewing the book and all your hard work. I love your podcast. That really sucks to read. That really does. This idea, though, of I held up my end of the bargain, why didn't I get the results that I wanted?
Yeah, and it's right back on the same track as our polyamorous lesbian friend was saying, of wasted time, of I didn't get to know who I was because of this. This person was with their spouse for 11 years. And yes, I understand. If there's anything I understand, it's losing time. says the person like 30 credits short of graduation from fundy colleges, if I put them all together. I get that. And yeah, I'm a big advocate for you can, you know, you can restore those years. You can give yourself so much of a richer life now that it makes up for the time you lost. It is never too late to change. It is never too late to create a better life for yourself and create a better version of yourself. I'm all about that. But I think all of us, so many of us, grieve that wasted time and that time that we lived in guilt and shame and fear.
My thought when reading this is like almost accountability. You know what I'm saying? Reading this, this is coming from a person who is clearly accountable, not just to themselves, but accountable to their partner, accountable probably to, you know, their church, probably to, yet who has, I don't want to say who has Joshua Harris been accountable to, but during this time, who was Joshua Harris accountable to? Who were, you know, the churches that were pushing this accountable to? Well, they said that they were accountable to God, but who's God accountable to? No one, because God is God. And there you go. Like, you, it's just like, if you don't get the results that you want, there's no one to complain to and say, hey, I tried this and it didn't work. Can I have, is there any, because like if I started a business and I said, if you give me, if you buy my product, X thing will happen, and you buy my product and X thing doesn't happen, it, you know, then you could, you know, take me to court and, you know, whatever for false advertising. For a religious group like this, or for like a religious teaching like this, there's no recourse that you can take with anybody if you don't get the results that you want. If there isn't like a, oh, I did everything right and I didn't get the perfect result and I didn't get the perfect marriage, I was lied to. Like, where is the accountability there?
And there isn't any, because there is no one at the top to blame except for God.
And who is God accountable to? Is God accountable to us?
Not in Fundy theology.
Not in Fundy theology. We're accountable to God. God's perfect and we fuck up and that's why everything's wrong. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, very like, I know what this value is, solve for X. If I don't get the result that I want, then I must be the problem.
Right.
Ugh. Okay. Do you want to read one or two more and then we'll go to break again and then we'll finish up?
That sounds great.
Okay.
Do you want me to do the next one?
Yeah. Go for
it. Okay. When my Fundy Light sister informed my parents that her children would be courting and not dating, it was the last straw. My parents already did not approve of the homeschooling and the hyper-religious lifestyle. It damaged my family. The rift in my family was present for years. I am very lucky that the rift was repaired before my parents died. I had 15 years of very little contact with my sister. We are still working on repairing the sister relationship that was strained. Because I was not directly affected, my post will not make it into the show. Directly affected people's stories should take precedence, but if you do share my story, don't say my name on air.
We have a lot of people who are directly affected, and we also have your stories, and it's important to tell all the angles of this.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I think it's important to note that the harm is like ripples in a pond, that it spreads. These children were almost certainly harmed by their mother's choices, but the mother who made those bad choices was also hurt. And this is something I actually just heard Tia Levings talking about, I believe, on Instagram.
By the way, I'm really excited for when her book comes out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm counting the days until her book comes out.
Do you know the release date?
It's in August. I don't know the date off the top of my head.
Okay. I would love to get her on this show to...
Yeah, she is fantastic. She's, I think, Tia.Levings on Instagram. Let me look her up real quick. Tia.Levings.
She has a Substack, too.
Yes, she does have a Substack. She links to that on her Instagram. Oh, Tia Levings Writer. Tia.Levings Writer, Writer, on Instagram.
And if you don't know who we're talking about, she was in Shiny Happy People. She was featured very prominently in Shiny Happy People, the IBLP and Duggars documentary. And if you haven't seen that, go watch that now.
Yep. But I think she was just talking about the stories of people who were the homeschool moms. And it may have been someone else that was talking about it, about this, but it doesn't matter because T is a great follow anyway. But we absolutely want to hear the stories of the parents who made these decisions for their family. We especially, when those parents have apologized to their children and repaired that relationship and done that work, and now they want to share with us why they made those decisions and why that seemed like a good idea and what the reconciliation process has been like with their children. Yes, we absolutely want to hear those stories. And this person is right. Yes, we should prioritize the people who are directly affected. And in these stories, we are always prioritizing women, people of color, LGBTQ people who are disproportionately harmed by purity culture. But that doesn't mean that other stories are not important as well. And in this story, a family was at odds with each other for 15 years, and that is not a small harm. So that story absolutely belonged in this episode.
Right, and I think it's important when we're talking about this to talk about like the, because I mean, I'm just thinking about like how many people do you know who don't talk to either like an aunt or an uncle or even their parents anymore because their parents are they have a relative that's like a QAnon casualty.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even have dinner with them because they'll want to bring up JFK Jr. is still alive and he's gonna whatever the fuck the Q people are saying now is gonna happen. And like how many people do we know? Because I know people personally who that's happened to. I'm sure you know people personally who that's happened to. And there's just people who you like who we can't even, you know, who it's almost impossible to have a relationship with anymore because they're just so. It's the same sort of thing. And it's absolutely okay to mourn the relationship that you lost due to not something that you did, and even sometimes not something that the other person did, but just because of something that they got sucked into because they just happened to be vulnerable in the wrong moment.
I want to pull this other response that we had a little bit further down in our notes, if that's okay, because I found one that's related.
You think this is, do you want me to read this one?
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. So this one says, I am too old to have grown up with this book, but my kids are millennials and it influenced my parenting. My son and his girlfriend, now wife, had a sexual relationship when they were teenagers and I was very upset. It was a huge deal to me and it affected my relationship with them. That sucks. You know, and I'm glad that, you know, this poster, this, responder now realizes that they were wrong in the past.
I think we can correctly prioritize the people who were the most harmed by purity culture and still give respect to people who were more indirectly affected, because this parent still lost years of good relationship with their son. That is an actual loss. Just like parents who get caught up in the gender critical TERF movement and lose relationships with their children, they have still lost something. It's because of their own bad decisions, but that doesn't make it not sad that they've lost that relationship with their kid and that their kid has lost that relationship that they could have had with a supportive parent. It's not tragic just because somebody in the gender critical TERF analogy is being an asshole. That doesn't make it not sad. And this person obviously now knows better and wouldn't do the same actions if they could go back in time, but they've lost that time. It is precisely what I mean when I say that purity culture affects everyone. And I say that over and over and over again, and I will say it 100 more times, purity culture hurts everyone.
You never know how much time you have. And like the previous 15 years that, you know, that relationship was strained or they had very little contact, that's 15 years that you'll never get back. And it's,
even if you live too well, even if you get, you know, back and are able to restore that relationship with your parent or child or family member and have a great relationship for the rest of your life and live to 100, there has still been a loss. And I think everybody is entitled to mourn those losses. Everybody, period.
Yeah. And nobody is here to tell you whether or not you deserve to be allowed to grieve, or what you deserve to be allowed to grieve for, because I think that's...
Yeah, we don't do that around here.
No, that's... That would be culty. That would be emotion control.
Oh, yeah, it would. Well, let's read one more and go to break. What do you think?
Okay, so this one is... So this person says, I read this one in college either right before or right after Elizabeth Elliot's Passion and Purity, and it absolutely wrecked me. I was 20, and in my particular IFB church, I was the old maid. Ooh, 20 years old already. I had recently broken up with an abusive boyfriend that I thought I had to marry because he had convinced me no one else would want me. I believed him because he basically groomed me from the age of 16. He was 20 when we started dating. I finally realized that if I did go through with marrying him, the emotional, spiritual, and sexual abuse would likely deteriorate into more active physical abuse. He was the son of one of the deacons and had grown up in that church, so everyone just kind of turned a blind eye. I had already internalized the fact that no one other than my parents would believe or acknowledge the depths of damage that he had done to me, and I felt sinful and sullied, so I dove into purity culture headlong. Based on everything I read, I believed I had to bear the cross of my singleness because of my poor choices and sin. The fact that all of my girlfriends were either already married or engaged made me feel like even more of a failure. Of course, most of them were rushing into marriage just to have sex. Here we are, 22 years later, and all but one or two of them are on their second or third marriages. I met my husband a month before my 22nd birthday, and we got married a year and a half later. He wasn't raised in church, and he was my biggest support in this process. Unfortunately, purity culture had also impacted us and our marriage. I had such an internalized sense of shame around all things related to sex. It's taken almost 20 years to get to a place where I'm comfortable in my own skin and in our bedroom. Purity culture is a cancer. Man.
And of course, we should note, no shame to somebody who ends up getting married more than once or more than an arbitrary number of times, but purity culture claims to support everyone finding the right person who is God's will and getting married one time and that's it. And purity culture completely fails to support people in that goal at all. And we hear that echo of someone's story that we read in the first part of the episode. About it took me 20 years to be comfortable with my own body and my own sex life. And that's another example of indirect harm as well, because this poster's husband was not raised in church, was not raised in purity culture, but their relationship has still been affected by purity culture. And that rings very true for me. Because I have my moments where something purity culture related triggers me or gets to me, and my husband was not raised in purity culture. And now he is being hurt or affected by the things that happen to me because of purity culture. The ripples go out and hurt everyone.
So often people think of, well, if X situation was so bad, why didn't you just leave? And this is a situation where there was, very real abuse. And rather than that being a catalyst to saying, oh, maybe purity culture is bad and I shouldn't be involved in this, it's like, oh, I must be bad. I need to try even harder. That really hurt to read. That was difficult.
Let's take one more break and we'll come back and finish these responses to I Kissed Dating Goodbye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey, Sadie here. If this is your first time listening to the Leaving Eden podcast, make sure you go back and check out episode 57. It's a primer episode for new listeners. That episode tells my personal story and gives you all the terms and information that you'll need to know going forward. Also, check out our cult true crime series, The First Family of Fundamentalism, so that you can get the whole cult story. If you like our show, you can support us by joining our Patreon, where we have extended and uncensored episodes, as well as other bonus content available. You can also join in the discussion in our Facebook group. That group is called Eden Exodus. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell your worst enemy. The Leaving Eden podcast is a fully independent podcast, and we really appreciate your support. Now, back to the show.
We are back from our break. We are finishing our... These are the last of the responses that we got. I think we've got three or four more. Is that right?
Yeah.
So Sadie, do you want to read this one?
Sure. When I was 13, our church decided that the teens should attend the Joshua Harris I Kiss Dating Goodbye conference in Chicago. I can't say youth group because those were considered too worldly for our church. It was February and very icy the further north we went. Around Springfield, the dad who was driving crashed the van we were in. Despite the fact that he was driving way too fast, considering that multiple cars were already in the ditch, the pastor and his wife called a church-wide meeting a few days later to say that the reason we crashed and didn't make the conference was because the teens in this church are full of rebellion and this is God's way of punishing. I've never understood how they got there, but that's also one of my tamest stories of those people.
That's an incredible story.
You would think if the teens in this church were full of rebellion and God wanted to get through to them, maybe he would let them make it to the church conference.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense. This story makes God seem very illogical.
Any adult man could command you to do something, and that man was automatically right.
Right, in general.
This man, even though, you know, he was driving way too fast and crashed the church van into a ditch, clearly his judgment was impeccable because he was an adult man in the church and who had been blessed by God, and there wasn't anything that he's the best driver. Even though he crashed the van into a ditch on an icy road because he was driving too fast. So it must have been God that intervened.
Yes.
Or God made the road too icy for him to drive down.
And caused a car wreck in an ice storm to get the teens' attention instead of letting them just go to the conference where they were going to let God get their attention in the first place. Sorry, this makes no sense.
This makes literally zero sense. Sadie, do you think that you can make an object lesson out of this?
Yeah, give me a second. Hold on. You can play the Jeopardy theme song or whatever.
I need to play the off-brand Jeopardy theme song that I'm going to punch in now. If you're hearing this right now, I'm playing it on my keyboard that I have plugged into my computer because I can't use the actual Jeopardy theme song because of copyright rules. But... whatever that theme song sounds like, I hope that you guys like my knockoff Jeopardy theme song.
So I'm going to take a wild shot based on what I remember from a Bible story that I may be wrong about.
Okay, go for it.
Just like Absalom got his hair stuck in a tree because he had been too rebellious for God to want to get his attention anymore, God made you run off the road and not get to the conference because you're too rebellious to want God's attention, for God to want to get to your attention anymore. Not an object lesson, but a scripture lesson.
there is real precedent for this kind of thing happening. That must be the where they came up with this logic.
I'm pretty sure that was Absalom. I'm not going to look it up today because I don't. All the stories about King David's kids are ridiculously disturbing.
Absalom died, didn't he?
Absalom died.
Slain. Yeah.
There's the whole. I'm not even going to reference it because it's going to trigger somebody.
Anyway, I'm going to read the next one. This person is talking about I Kissed Dating Goodbye. This book was pushed heavily in the homeschool circles in the late 1990s. I think I may still have a copy somewhere. My mom made me read it, and she ascribed heavily to its teachings. She was already heavily into believing that we should court and not date, so this book just further underpinned her super conservative beliefs that she ascribes to today. She believes dating is a sin, does not think you should even kiss before marriage, and etc. Since I am a people pleaser, I tied the line and bought into it all as well. When I went away to Bible college, I came across the book I Gave Dating a Chance, which I'm sure if I read it now, there are probably problematic views in it too, but it was a counterposition to I Kissed Dating Goodbye. We should read that book, Sadie. And it allowed me to see that dating wasn't sinful. I changed my stance a bit. I was 19 or 20 at this point. But my mom was pretty upset that I had read that other book. When I tried to get her to read it, just to get a different perspective, she refused. Information control. Not allowing outside perspectives or a diversity of thought is kind of culty, don't you think?
Yeah. I Gave Dating a Chance, A Biblical Perspective to Balance the Extremes, was published in 2000.
So 3 years after.
The time has come for a sound, biblical, and practical approach that balances out the extreme perspectives, dating without responsibility versus a complete withdrawal from the dating process. Learn how you can confidently pursue healthy dating relationships that are characterized by holiness and integrity, and ultimately bring glory and honor to God in I Give Dating a Chance.
So, who's this book by?
Jeremy Clark.
Where did... Not Jeremy Clarkson.
No, Jeremy guy. Clark. I don't know anything about this person.
Maybe we should find it. Where did you... Okay, hold on. Don't wait. Where's my phone? I'm going to start a timer, and you're going to see where this person went to school and who they are associated with.
Okay, tell me when to start.
3, 2, 1, go.
All right, I found
a stopwatch going.
I was looking on Amazon, which is where I found that last paragraph that I just read about his book. Jeremy and Jerusha Clark. Jerusha is his wife. Okay, let's see.
This is in real time. I'm not going to clip this so that it makes it seem like it's shorter.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to vamp so that Standing Stone Ministry, Dr. Jeremy and Jerusha.
We're at 30 seconds.
Clark, they have been published by Focus on the Family. They have a website. Here's their website. Masters of Divinity and Doctorate of Ministry from Talbot Theological Seminary. I think that is Southern Baptist. We are looking up Talbot Theological. It's at Biola. Okay. Evangelical Christian Theological Seminary located near Los Angeles. Biola University Talbot School of Theology. Ed Stetzer is the dean. Who's Ed Stetzer? I know this guy. Is Ed Stetzer, he's somebody. Hold on. He's famous. Yeah, Ed Stetzer is Southern Baptist educated. American pastor, author, pastor, Christian missiologist. I know this guy from something.
Ed Stetzer sounds really familiar. We're at 140.
Oh, executive director of Lifeway Research, a division of Lifeway Christian Resources. Okay, so he's worked for Lifeway. Okay,
what's Lifeway?
And he is the dean, one of the largest Christian publishers and like Christian bookstore things. He is the dean. Why Talbot?
Okay, that's 2 minutes. I'm going to stop it there because, like, that was all in real time, by the way. But, like, you found out who this guy was in, like, less than a minute.
Like, where he went to school. and Standing Stone Ministry, Shepherding the Shepherds. So I'm just going to check out what Standing Stone Ministry is, because it looks like it's a Shepherding the Shepherds. So it's a ministry leaders and spouses mentoring other ministry leaders and their spouses.
So it's like the ministry leaders and spouses for ministry leaders and spouses, like Bethany Beals has the online course for online courses.
Yeah, it's like that, or like Dave Hiles Fallen in Grace Ministries, but like much less shady. So I'm scrolling through like the people associated with this, and they appear to be, you know, mainstream evangelical or Southern Baptist, but there's familiar faces in here.
So what I'm getting from this is that Joshua Harris, very non-denominational, but also like Calvinist and stuff. But his book is taking the, you know, the Southern Baptist, the fundamentalist by storm. They kind of need a response, and they're not totally all on board with the whole courtship thing. Not all of them are, at least. So they kind of need their own response to it in order to make it all okay.
Yeah, because like this guy, so Jeremy Clark, he let me look up one more thing. Pacific Coast Church. This took me a little bit longer, but he's got multiple ministries. Where your beliefs? Where is that? Grounded in the Bible. Our beliefs.
Okay, but that can mean anything.
Yeah. This is vaguely Baptistic. I would say this is a pretty typical evangelical church.
So they're Baptistic. Believe in the rapture. Theology. Okay.
Yeah. Baptist or Baptist Light Evangelical Church that Jeremy Clark now works for, senior associate pastor at Pacific Coast Church in San Clemente, California. This guy is like the mainstream answer to the mainstreaming of I Kiss Dating Goodbye from just having perused about four websites.
Right, because you can't have an entire, like, literally everybody who's either Southern Baptist or like a you can't have all of those people just saying, we're not dating, we're courting anymore, because that would just be complete chaos
for
anything to do with trying to have relationships. Like, your population would just fucking plummet, because no one could get married to each other, because you'd never find the right people that they could court with, unless you just wanted to just straight up do arranged marriages with everyone, which I don't know if I would really recommend that.
Sorry, that was a rabbit hole that was 10 tabs open on my computer.
We have three more stories.
Yeah. So I'll do this one, and then you do the next one, and then I'll do the very last one.
Okay, cool.
Okay. I read I Kiss Dating Goodbye multiple times as a teen. It inspired me not to date in high school at all and wait until I was a sophomore in college before having a boyfriend. I then married the first boy who was my first real boyfriend. I did go on dates before that, and I credit my aunt for encouraging me to do that. My husband, however, did not. He regrets it. We have both been hurt by being raised in purity culture. We have been together 21 years and married almost 19 years. It continues to affect us to this day. We will not be raising our children to wait until marriage. Instead, we will be teaching them about safety, consent, respect, autonomy, and anatomy. My current struggle is wondering how to encourage my children to explore their sexuality as they grow, while still impressing upon them the need for self-control in certain areas and safety. This has never been modeled for me or my husband, and we will face serious scrutiny and backlash from our relatives.
The thing that seems interesting to me that, you know, that I have to wonder is that how many people were raised in purity culture and they did end up, you know, having a good marriage, and they ended up finding a partner who they were compatible with, who respected them, who treated them well. But they're also just thinking back like, you know what? I wish that I had actually dated people before I met you. And there's like a, you know, like, can that cause problems in a marriage? Is that something that causes problems for people, do you think?
Yeah, I think it absolutely can. This is something even I wish I had dated other people and still ended up with you is a perfectly valid thing to feel, but is probably not going to come off very nice to your partner. They probably don't want to hear that. And if you feel that way, your feelings are very valid. And if your partner's feelings are hurt by it, their feelings are also valid. And that puts you at an impasse in a relationship where you have a truth about yourself that needs to be expressed, and that truth hurts your partner's feelings. And that's never a good position to be in.
No, it really isn't.
Because it is so hard to balance that in a relationship. So this person also said that they're really focusing on how to encourage their children to explore and do that safely. And I really think you're on the right track with that, because you're teaching them. You cannot just not teach your kid purity culture and expect everything to turn out okay. You can't just not teach them anything or not take responsibility for that part of their development and expect everything to just come out peachy. But this person says they are teaching their children safety, consent, respect, autonomy, and anatomy. And those are the tools that your kid needs to make the correct decisions for themselves.
Yeah, and that seems like good parenting to me.
Yeah, I think they're on the right track. A lot of these stories have been like, yeah, shit was really rough for me, but it's getting better now.
Right, but it's like decades.
This whole episode could have been that one sentence.
But it's like literally decade for some people. Yes. They're talking about like it's literally decades later after I got this book, and it's still giving me issues now. I'm going to move on to the next one, and then you want to read the last one, and then we're going to do finishing thoughts. Says, our entire youth group read I Kissed Dating Goodbye. It had an impact on me. I never dated until I was in my 20s. I was terrified I'd give part of myself away and become unworthy of a good Christian man, so I left the IFB. Well, I did end up sleeping with the boy I was dating. We moved in together. Only months later, he converted to the IFB through my parents and church's influence. Because of that, I was told I had to marry him because I'd given myself to him. I fell for it and believed God would punish me if I didn't marry this man and return to the church to make things right. After 14 years, I've finally gotten the courage to leave again. Oh, that's a situation in which the purity culture isn't just like it's so devaluing to people that it makes you feel like, well, this is the only place where you have, like, you've used up all your options. You've got one shot. You've got one option.
And that's never a fair thing to tell somebody. That's not true.
No.
I'm not about shaming anybody's choices, and I'm always wanting to be really cognizant of not shaming a choice that somebody made when they believed they only had one option, and not shaming mistakes that people made unless I have real good reason to think that they did it on purpose to hurt somebody or something like that. But people make less than ideal decisions because they are under that kind of pressure, or they're being told that they only have one option and there's no other way out. And then they deal with the consequences of those decisions for decades. And I think this is why, honestly, I'm going to rant one more time before I read our nice closing piece. I think this is why people are so mad about Josh Harris trying to be the leader of the deconstruction movement, because he walked away from the consequences of his actions. He was somewhat amicably divorced and able to co-parent with his ex-spouse. He is dating again. He has an online platform. He has a good job. He seems to be so unscathed by purity culture. I think that is one reason that it really irked so many people so badly when he tried to release that deconstruction course, because people perceive that he walked away with bumps and bruises when other people are still suffering from the outcome of reading his book.
Right. Like, how many people have we heard from that said, well, because of purity culture, I felt like I had to get married to the guy who was abusing me? because
yep.
I read this book and I thought that I would be worthless otherwise. But he doesn't have to actually live that down.
Right. And I going all the way back to the first one, the first thing that we talked about where he recommended his wife's book, I do mostly believe, I don't know when I say mostly believe or somewhat believe or probably believe that he is actually penitent for the harms that he has done and actually committed to changing as a person and not doing more harm. But that does not mean that we as deconstructors or we as people who were hurt by purity culture are obligated to treat him any particular way. That it does not make a good and probably sincere apology and a good and probably sincere attempt at changing his life does not mean we owe him.
My other thought is also that, I mean, he did recommend his ex-wife's book. But also, he was hardly in the book. He came off from the book from the woman they wanted. Like, my impression of him that I got was that he wasn't necessarily the guy who came up with all of this stuff. He just kind of was a conduit through which a lot of it flowed. And that he, like, and that's sort of how he came off in her book. So, him. It's not like him recommending a book where he's portrayed as a f***ing monster. He's just portrayed as, like, kind of there, but not really.
Yeah. So you're saying, well, maybe he thought the book made him look less guilty.
I'm not saying I think, like, I think that I'm sure that a bunch of that stuff happened behind the scenes that, you know, if you're getting divorced from somebody and you still, you know, respect them as a person, you're not going to air every piece of dirty laundry that you have from that person if you're writing a book about them.
Right.
Because that would just, I mean, that just might make a situation untenable that, you know, especially if it's somebody that you're trying to co-parent with and you have to think about yourself. And I don't, you know, I don't begrudge Shannon one bit for not airing every single piece of dirty laundry because honestly, who wants Josh Harris's dirty laundry? Not I. No, I do think that it's part of it also just feels like to me that when he was a teenager, and you know who his parents were and they were big leaders in the homeschooling movement, he was their eldest son, that he was anointed to be a leader of this next generation of Christian people. And it seems to me that he still wants to have a position of leadership somewhere because that's the only thing that he knows how to do. It's also just a bit of like a no matter what he does, people are going to be paying attention to him, whether or not no matter what, people are going to be keeping tabs on what it is he's up to, unless he decides that he's going to delete all social media, change his name, and like get plastic surgery so that he looks different and then get a job working at Target or something. Like he's not going to be able to avoid people like paying attention to him. Even if he completely retreats from the public eye because so many people are just like.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily think I'm the ultimate person to decide the fate of this person I have never met.
No,
I just have some general thoughts. That's about it.
Right.
So I want to end with this post from Hannah in the Facebook group. Man, the I Kiss Dating Goodbye episode hit me hard. I wasn't expecting that. I grew up SDA, Seventh-day Adventist, and read this book as a teenager. I want to thank Sadie Carpenter for saying what she did about purity culture in evangelical groups that have fewer specific modesty rules. Placing the responsibility of assessing what specific ways your individual teenager body can be objectified and how that's your fault as the girl on an actual child is so f***ed up. Thank you for that validation. I also want to express my tremendous appreciation for Sadie's acknowledgement and understanding of aspec, asexual, demisexual, and aromantic people. It's so rare to encounter even brief references to these orientations in any kind of content, not to mention educated inclusion. So thank you, Hannah. First, I want to thank my A-spectrum friends because there are people in my life who have taken a lot of time to educate me about A spectrum things, and I am an A spectrum people, and I am really thankful to them for giving me that opportunity to learn. I think that this is one group that is so often overlooked when we talk about purity culture. Over and over, I say purity culture hurts everyone. It harms everyone it touches. It is always appropriate to center the experiences of people who are harmed the most by purity culture. People of color, queer people, and women bore heavier burdens than white straight men. I also think it's always appropriate to include the struggles of men, even white straight men, who were harmed by purity culture, because it hurts everyone. We do not need to exclude somebody's struggle with purity culture. But I think that ace and ace spectrum people can so often be totally overlooked when we talk about this. And I'm glad it came up in the Facebook group, because I do want to shine a light on that. Purity culture teaches that purity culture teaches that all men are monsters with no self-control. Well, when someone who is assigned male at birth is asexual or on the asexual spectrum, and they don't feel like an uncontrollable monster, and they don't feel attraction to anyone at all, they can feel very broken. They can feel like something's wrong with them. And this happens in regular society with erasure of ace people as well. But in purity culture, when your value is related to what attractions you feel and how you feel about those attractions and how you manage them and who you do and do not have sex with, it gets really messy really fast for ace spectrum people. It is, I think people really tend to overlook that. And I'm glad that I was able to bring attention to that, because like I said a minute ago, I don't want to overlook anybody's struggle with purity culture. Purity culture hurts all people in some ways that are universal, and it hurts different groups of people in special, unique ways. Purity culture hurts everybody in some ways, and it has unique hurts for women who are raised, women and AFAB people who are raised with extremely strict dress codes the way that I was. And it has unique hurts and unique cruelty for women and AFAB people who are raised with less strict dress codes and told to just figure it out. And it has unique cruelty for queer people, and it has unique cruelty for trans people, and it has unique cruelty for ace spectrum people. And I want to include all of that when I talk about the harms of purity culture.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And I want to thank everybody who wrote in and sent us messages. I think we put just about all of them, all of the ones that we got.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and it was enough time to do that. Next week, we are talking about... What are we talking about next week? It is... next week is the episode about the protest that's going on, right? There's going to be... do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'm going to be attending the protest at First Baptist Church of Hammond during Servants Conference, which is what they call pastor school, this week. And I will walk in from the airport and sit down in my chair and record an episode about it so that we can get it out for you as soon as possible.
That is very exciting. And I want to say also thank you to everybody who's helping to set up that protest and make that thing happen. I sadly won't be there. I wanted to be there, but I couldn't make the money work in my life. That's going to be happening next week. And we can't wait to talk about it here on the show. And you will hear about this then. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. You guys have a great day. You can follow the podcast on Facebook and Instagram at Leaving Eden Podcast. You can follow me at GAVRIALHACOHEN, Sadie.
You can follow me on Instagram at Sadie Carpenter Music and on TikTok at Sadie Carpenter 1.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. You have a great day. Bye bye.
But old rolling river of time, you've healed me in too many days. it.